Hello and welcome to The Hearing, our music review show here on the channel. I'm John.
And from Chicago's North Side, I'm Scotto.
And without any further ado, on to this week's album, which is from 1976, Zootal Wars by Frank Zappa. Who else can follow David Bowie?
Yeah, I kind of like, man, did they ever work together, those two?
I don't think so. I will have to check, but I think I would know about that.
Like, I know, I saw Eno had worked with Zappa.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course he worked with Bowie.
Of course. Frank Zappa was an American composer, activist, and filmmaker. His work is characterized by nonconformity, freeform improvisation, sound experiments, musical virtuosity, and satire of American culture. In a career spanning more than 30 years, Zappa composed rock, pop, jazz, jazz fusion, orchestral, and music concrete works, and produced almost all of the 60-plus albums that he released. 60-plus albums. With his band Mothers of Invention and as a solo artist, Zappa also directed feature-length films and music videos and designed album covers. He's considered one of the most innovative and stylistically diverse rock musicians of his era. Unfortunately, on December 4th, 1993, Zappa died of prostate cancer. Zootal Wars is his fifth or sixth solo album, depending on how you want to consider Lumpy Gravy, and his first post-Mother of Invention album, and his 22nd album overall.
Now, I was kind of disappointed that we weren't going to get a Chester Thompson, which I think this is like his first album without him.
Oh, wow. Okay.
In some time, at least.
Now, bear in mind, that was 22 albums in 10 years. The first Mothers of Invention album was 66. So the workload is ridiculous. The title is a pun on the French expression Zootalors, which conveys mild surprise. It's also his only release on Warner Brothers. Due to a lawsuit with his former manager, Herb Cohen, Zappa's recording contract was temporarily reassigned from Discreet Records to Warner Brothers. Zappa recorded the album after completing a world tour with a band that included Napoleon Murphy Black on tenor sax and vocals, Andre Lewis on keyboards, Roy Estrada on bass, Terry Bozzio on drums. However, this band only appeared on the live tracks on the album, and only Bozzio was retained for the sessions. I think Chester came in later. I think Chester came in the 80s, come to think of it.
No,
this was
him.
Right off the back of the Mothers.
Chester was in the Mothers, I believe.
Oh, okay. I have to look into that.
Yeah, like this was his first album without him, and then I think he came back to do one more with them, and then after that, he joined Genesis on tour for
I didn't think Chester
the next
went back
15
long.
Years.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like 70, I think.
By the time Zootalors was finished, Zappa had begun forming a new live band, including Bozzio, Patrick O'Hearn, and Eddie Jobson, who were pictured on the album cover with Zappa, although the latter two did not perform on the album. Incidentally, at most of Missing Persons, I'm not sure about Warren Kirkyurulo or Chuck Wild, but the other three, the Bozzios and Patrick O'Hearn, all met because they worked with Zappa. Missing Persons was basically a Zappa spinoff group.
That's wild. And then, like,
I'm tempted to say that Kirkyurulo worked with them too. Warren Kirkyurulo, the guitarist. I'm pretty sure Chuck Wild, the keyboard player, didn't, but the rest of the band worked with Zappa.
Wow.
Zootal Wars was released on October 20th, 1976 by Warner Brothers and features Zappa, guitar on all tracks, bass on all tracks except Black Napkins and Zootal Wars, lead vocals, synthesizers, keyboards, and director of recreational activities on The Torture Never Stops. Terry Bozzio, drums on all tracks and backing vocals with additional musicians, Davey Moir, lead vocals on Wind Up Working on a Gas Station and backing vocals, Andre Lewis, organ and background vocals on Black Napkins and backing vocals, Roy Estrada, bass and vocals on Black Napkins, and drone bass on Friendly Little Finger and backing vocals, Napoleon Murphy Black, vocals on Black Napkins, Ruth Underwood, synthesizer marimba, Captain Beefheart, harmonica, credited as Donnie Valet.
It's kind of weird to just get Captain Beefheart to just do the harmonica.
Yeah, well, they work together a lot. I think Captain Beefheart got his start from Zappa, if I'm remembering that correctly. Ruben Ladron de Guevara, backing vocals, Ian Underwood, saxophone, Bruce Feller, trumpet, Sal Marquez, Bruce Feller, trombone, Sal Marquez, trumpet, Dave Peralto, bass on Zoodlers, Luann Neal, harp on Zoodlers, and finally Sparky Parker, love that name, backing vocals on Disco Boy. Now on to the tracks, finally. And of course, reminder, I don't edit any songs into the episodes, but down in the description, you'll find links to find Zoodlers on Spotify, and also on our blog at johnandscotty.com. You'll find links to find Zoodlers on Spotify and YouTube. On to track one, Wind Up Working in a Gas Station. I think this one is about how worthless a college education is, but I'm not sure. Kind of goes in a couple of different directions.
He is talking about the senselessness of going for your education when you could just be wind up working in a gas station anyway.
It's just a nice, loud, upbeat number to kick the album off.
Yeah.
Really fun. Love the upbeat. Love the heavy bass sound. It's a bit repetitive.
A bit doo-woppy. That's my one criticism of Zappa that I've never really liked about him, is that there's just too much doo-woppy.
Well, that's kind of where he started musically. Doo-wop. He came up in the 50s originally.
The guitar wizardry.
On to track two, perfect segue, Black Napkins. This really is just an extended guitar solo with some ooze.
And I could
OOHS, not OOZ.
And if the album were just this for the entire 40 minutes, I think I'd be like, God damn, that was amazing.
He could shred.
I could have listened to this for 40 minutes easily.
You know, when the guy hires Steve Vai for impossible guitar parts, meaning he can play anything except for the stuff that Steve Vai can do. And while I'm not a huge Vai fan, he is technically probably the greatest living guitarist.
Now, Vai played on this?
He played on some of his later stuff.
Okay, I was going to say, because...
No, Zappa played all the guitar on this.
I didn't think Vai was around at this time. I thought he was Zappa a little younger than that.
Yeah, Zappa came in the mid-80s, maybe 10 years after this.
The first time I was aware of Vai was David Lee Roth's
Same here,
band.
Same here. I found it afterwards.
Was like 89, I'm thinking? 88?
Possibly. He played on Man from Utopia, which I want to say was like 85, 84. I think that was his first with Zappa.
Okay. But yeah,
Vai was credited with impossible guitar parts, which means the stuff that only Steve Vai can do was the limit of what Zappa can do.
Okay, there's some crazy people. I mean, why didn't Vai and Carl Palmer ever get together? Because the two of them, one's playing drums with like his feet and like teeth. And
the only time I've ever liked Billy Sheehan was when he played with Vai. Anyway, back to Black Napkins. Again, it's just an extended guitar solo. And the band often played repetitive parts during Zappa's solos so that Zappa could just go off and do whatever he wanted without having to worry about how it worked harmonically.
Right. This one, it might even be my pick for strongest track of the album, honestly.
Wow.
It's just, I could listen to this forever.
Definitely pick up or check out on Spotify, Shut Up and Play Your Guitar. Because that's all he does. It's just extended guitar solos. Love how atonal it gets toward the end when the drums start to follow the guitar.
Yeah.
So, for the most part, he's just improvising when the band stays, repetitive. But it gets really interesting compositionally toward the end. On to track three, The Torture Never Stops. This has a really nice lead-in from Black Napkins. They kind of just segue together nicely.
It really downshifts here, though.
Yeah, but they segue into it nicely. I love the groove. It's just this slow, heavy, kind of bluesy groove. And the lyrics of this one were often adapted to the news of the time.
Oh, yeah?
It's basically about a dungeon.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's kind of like a political prisoners thing, right? Yeah, yeah. Like just like what Bowie's singing about 4 years later.
Right. I have, of course, since we reviewed it not long ago, I thought of Princess Bride, of course.
Were you talking about to the year?
Right. Love the slide guitar and bass parts. I think the bass was actually played with a slide.
Oh, yeah.
I will say, and this is going to be one of my first, my big criticism of Zappa. Because Zappa is compositionally one of my big heroes, my big four. It's Zappa, Da Vinci, Tesla, and Buckaroo Banzai are my four big, like, massive heroes. Hey, Banzai was the one who made me realize you can be more than one thing. but I still love Zappa compositionally. He was a genius. I've kind of outgrown his humor.
I don't think he gets it right here, honestly, this track. You know?
And I mean, the recreational activities, I think, kind of take away from the song.
Yeah. Like, this one would get my pick for the weakest track on the album.
Okay.
First off, it goes on too long.
It does go on. It gets a bit repetitive. I just love the groove and the feel of the slide and the slide bass. And musically, I like it. But the lyrics are a little meh. It just describes this dungeon, and it does go on too long.
I get, that he was trying to say, go, it never stops, so he wanted to go 10 minutes. But even that's kind of being a bit on the nose,
Yeah.
Like, someone singing, this is the song that never ends, and you're going to go on for 10 minutes. Yeah, so. Yeah. All right, we get it.
On to track four, Ms. Pinky. Again, this just has a great, heavy, weird groove. It says on Wikipedia, and I don't know if I buy this, but that this album was an influence on heavy metal. And it is a pretty heavy album. Loud, thick, guitar sounds. This just has a nice, weird, kind of heavy groove. And it's about a blow-up doll.
I was thinking it was something about that. Yeah. The first listen through, it was kind of, I liked it a lot better on the second one. Yeah, I think I needed to like take a break after that last track and come back.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I knew what to expect, I was more into this one.
And speaking of expectations, I never would have expected a harmonica solo on this one.
It's Captain Beefheart, though, yes, player, right?
Hell of a harmonica player. I got to check out some more Beefheart stuff. And I will point out that, and especially going into this next one, that Zappa's lyrics were typically satire.
Yeah.
He was always satirizing something. Going into track five, Find Her Finer. This one is almost kind of country-ish.
Yeah.
It has a weird kind of, it's mid-70s. It was that urban cowboy kind of vibe. Love the mid-rangey bass sound and how the bass is on both sides.
Oh, yeah.
Which I typically would criticize because I'm a stickler for bass right down the middle. I've said this before. Zappa can pull that off. Speaking of bass, Jeff Berlin, a session bassist who is, legendarily good and also brilliant player and also legendarily arrogant, has gotten in trouble a few times because of his arrogance, has famously said that he never had to practice for a gig unless it was with Zappa.
Oh, yeah. He was just as bad as James Brown, He really worked his fucking band.
Well, he worked his band, but also you have to work to be able to play this shit. I think that was Berlin's point is, I can play anything. You just put anything in front of me on a page and I can play it offhand, but except for Zappa. That I got to work for. And this one is about Get Back to Find Her Finer. It's advice about picking up women based on kind of the machismo of the late 70s.
Yeah.
He kind of gets into that era, the late 70s disco macho kind of era. But
the weird thing is this is 76. This is before.
Just before a lot of that
stuff. A lot of that stuff really
got
out of hand.
He saw it coming.
And I kind of, this track really doesn't work for me either, honestly. It kind of falls.
It is very doo-wop, and you said the doo-wop thing is what you don't really like about his stuff.
And who the fuck thought this was a single? Did you know this was the lead single to the album?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why when I put up a video on Tuesday to promote this episode, I went with this title track.
I mean, you picked this over Working in a Gas Station?
Mm-hmm.
As your lead single? That doesn't make any fucking sense.
Or Wonderful Wino, or, some other better songs, yeah.
Disco Boy was the other single, which you could kind of see,
Especially in 76.
But
Finer's always been one of his weak ones for me.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's as bad as The Torture Never Stops, mm-hmm. because that just kind of is relentless. this at least had the decency to just get in, hit it, and quit, and get out. But it just didn't work.
On to track six, Friendly Little Finger.
This is more like it.
Sounds like a sexual innuendo, but then it turns out to just be another extended guitar solo. But it's this is one of my favorites. It starts with this kind of Indian music, but Zappa-ized.
Yes.
Reminds me a lot of Peaches and Regalia, which if like us, you grew up on the early days of MTV, you have heard Peaches and Regalia at plenty of times.
I'm trying to remember if I've heard them. I probably have.
It was the one Zappa song. It was a Zappa instrumental that was one of those early videos that, you know, they, when they played anything they could get their hands on. And I love the frenetic bass and the kind of jazz drums. It gets very, what's called harmelodic, which is when the melody, harmony, and rhythm are given equal weight. So nothing is more important than anything else, and nothing necessarily serves anything else. So it's kind of a band solo. Everybody kind of does their own thing.
Of the early Pink Floyd, actually. You know, the Syd Barrett era where they were just fucking jamming. Like they, in fact, I think on YouTube there is video of Zappa joining Floyd to play Interstellar Overdrive.
Nice.
And that's what this song reminds me so much of. Like it even kind of, it kind of breaks down a little bit in the end, like it.
The heavy riff at the end, which I love.
Yeah.
Also the shifting tempos. It was like they just all decided we're just going to play whatever.
Yeah.
and the rhythm was entirely dependent on whatever Terry Bozzio felt like doing at the time. And then it's interrupted by what I have described as wedding music.
Well, it's kind of like a Saucer Full of Secrets where they break down into the, like the Salvation Army band off the street.
Right.
And play in the middle.
And that segues nicely into Wonderful Wino.
Yeah.
This one was co-written by Zappa and Jeff Simmons, the bassist from the Mothers. Love his low vocals on this one. There are a lot of those kind of low, close vocals that Zappa does, which I really like.
Right.
And it's about basically getting drunk on wine, something I can certainly relate to a lot these days. Great groove. I think the electric piano is a nice touch. It's just this nice, thick, heavy, bluesy kind of song. Not really a lot to say about it other than that.
Right.
It's just about getting drunk. And on to track 8, the title track, Zoo to Lures. This is my favorite. It's the only instrumental on the album that's not just an extended guitar solo.
Yeah.
Love the sort of playful deviations from the rhythm in the intro and the bass. I love the bass part on this.
I would have liked this if it had gone on longer, this one, you know? It kind of fades out a little too early for me.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and the fade is very sudden.
Yeah, it is. Like, you felt like there was a lot more of this song left. In fact, I saw that at one point he was considering doing this as a double album.
Yeah.
And so I wonder...
This would have been extended, yeah.
Yeah.
What I love about this, other than this lead bass, which just sounds amazing, Zappa had this great bass tone that was nice and mid-rangey and fat. Very reminiscent of Gibson Thunderbird for the other bass players out there. Love the bass sound and love the melodic part. Also, the individual parts, and this is one of the things I love about this song, the individual parts are pretty simple. Like, nobody's really showing off.
Right.
But when you put it all together, it's beautifully complex and very pretty, which is not something you can say for a lot of Zappa's music. It's rare that he wrote anything pretty.
Well, I think his, like, later, like, his symphonic stuff.
Yeah, well, was that more was going still for that. Pretty Zappa. I mean, he went. I don't have this in my notes, but I was reading up on his methods of composing something he called Project Object, where he would compose individual sections and kind of approach it in a modular way, where he would take these parts and put them together, like particular instrument parts, and take them out of context and put them into other contexts.
I think he was doing that with guitar solos. Uh-huh. Like he just have guitar solos. And then he would just drop them into the middle of different songs. I think he even did that on this album in a few places, but I think more so like on Joe's Garage, where he just had these random solos that he dropped.
And even that rhythmic digression before the guitar solo, it's actually in time. I counted it. Except for the intro. The intro, they slipped the timing. The timing gets kind of funky.
Yeah.
But everything after the main riff starts, it's all in time, which amazes me because it doesn't sound like it's in time. it all just recovers nicely. And then it fades too quickly and ends too suddenly. And then into the final track, track 9, Disco Boy.
It's always funny because he's always putting down disco,
mm-hmm.
but yet he always performs disco as parody.
Yeah, yeah. But he opens this one with kind of classic rock.
Yeah.
Which he does a couple of times also right. on the album. And then it just goes into this disco song that mocks disco.
I mean, I always thought he doth protest a little too much.
Mm-hmm. This for me is the weakest one.
Yeah.
It just doesn't say much that, you know, he's too cute from Shake Your Booty said the same thing, basically.
Yeah.
It's just mocking the pretty disco boy.
Right.
He goes back to the classic rock in the middle. I do like the ending riff, but that's about it. So would you recommend it?
Definitely.
I would too. I mean, like I said, Zappa is one of my absolute idols.
I think when he lays off the doo-wop, it's very compelling. Mm-hmm. My second favorite track, the one that I was kind of debating on, would be, of course, Friendly Little Fingers.
Yeah, the guitar solo. Both the guitar Definitely solos. Check out Shut Up and Play Your Guitar. Zappa is not for the faint of heart, musically or lyrically. But if you've never heard him, you really need to. He was an icon. I actually, unfortunately, discovered him with his induction into the Hall of Fame.
Oh, wow.
This guitarist I was playing with in college, Greg, was a big fan. And I discovered him through Greg. But I think the first time I really heard about him was when he passed away. And I was starting Theory 2, I think. No, Theory 1 in college at that time, music theory. And my music theory teacher, who seemed like one of these, you know, only classical and jazz matter kind of people, was like completely broken up about losing Zappa.
Yeah.
I later got into his work. I do think, given where the Hall of Fame has gone, and I have said this before, I think if he were still alive, he would not be in the Hall of Fame.
Wow. You might be right.
Given that Crimson is not in the Hall of Fame. You know,
that's true. Robert fucking Fripp is nowhere in the Hall of Fame.
You know, it took so many prog acts. So, I mean, they're starting to get in. Rush is finally in. Is Tull even in?
No.
Crimson, no IQ, no Can, you know?
Yeah, a lot of those guys are never getting in.
I think Zappa would be right there with him if he were still with us.
I mean,
as I've said before, it is the Pop Hall of Fame. Yeah. And you know, Zappa would not have gotten into the Pop Hall of Fame. I'm glad he got in, but you know, I he's one of my idols, as I've said a few times now, but I don't think he would be in if he were still with us. I don't
know. He had a lot of, you know, back then though, it was the critics that were the only ones coming up right, with
yeah,
who they got putting it. In. And yeah, they adored him, you know. But you know. They it's never been cool to like prog, so
yeah, exactly. And Zappa, I mean, you have to, there are two people, I think someone I used to know in college made this point about prog in general, but I think it doubly applies to Zappa. There are two people who like Zappa and like prog in general. And you're an exception to this, but generally it's musicians and stoners. Musicians because we get it, and stoners just because it's interesting. You know, it's not just normal music.
Well, I mean, it's something about using both sides of the brain at the same time. You know, it's always been...
Well, that's actually kind of a myth. That whole hemispheric dominance thing is a myth. They both kind of do... different. They both work at the same time.
Well, yeah, but there's different sides that focus on different things.
Kind of.
And it's you know, something that you've always looked to do to go at the same time.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, because it's you have to think about it, but it's also creative and musical. And yeah.
Right.
Anyway, that's it for Zoodlers. Until next time, when we'll be reviewing Francis the Mute by the Mars Volta.
The lone timer was cool to like Prague.
I think them and I'm kind of stretching Prague here, but 30 Seconds to Mars, Jared Leto's band.
Yeah, you're really stretching it there.
Kind of proggy, proggish. They've been considered prog.
I don't know about 30 seconds to Mars.
A lot of bands that were more technical were considered prog. Anyway, I've never really heard Mars Volta, so that'll be interesting. I put them there because they're prog and we're following Zappa, so, you know. And from what I have heard, they're not just like, you know, playing in odd time signatures and hard, you know, hard rock prog. They're not just
some weird
shit. They're not just a Rush wannabe band.
Oh, no, not at all.
Which I think is why 30 Seconds to Mars gets labeled prog, because they are kind of Rush wannabes.
I mean, Mars Volta is just out there. Much more out there than Rush is, because Rush, yeah. Rush is very straight-laced, you know.
Rush was, and I love Rush, they're one of my favorites, but they were just a hard rock band that liked odd time signatures.
Right, exactly. These guys are just weird.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life,
there you are.